God, we just thank you for your presence. And God, I thank you for your goodness. Lord, I'm serious when I say this morning, I feel like there is something about the word passion that you're imparting into our congregation. As we see the passion that you had for us, the passion which led you to everything that you went through to get to us, I just feel like, God, you're stirring up the passion within us, the passion to pursue you and the passion to pursue our destiny. And so, God, I pray as this word goes forth, that you would use it as a seed to transform lives. We thank you. You're doing a good work in this house. We honor you and we bless you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Listen, as y'all know, we are in our Destiny series. And today we're going to talk about passion. And the title of my message is Passion's Fruit. Look to your neighbor and say, Passion's Fruit. No, this is not a Drake song. This is the title of my message. Now, one of the most prolific writers of our generation wrote this. It's kind of a poem, and it's actually very profound and very deep, and I'm going to read it to you, okay? This writer said this, looking back on the things I've done, I was trying to be someone. I played the part, kept you in the dark. Now let me show you the shape of my heart. Backstreet Boys. And you know, I was thinking about these lyrics for some reason, and I feel like there's something in this that it resonates with the church today, especially when it comes to the topic of destiny and of passion. You see, the question I want to ask you is this: what is the shape of your heart? I'm not talking about, you know, Backstreet Boys in front of you singing and swooning to you. I'm asking you, what is the shape of your heart? In other words, your heart is shaped by your passions. And so what is the shape of your heart? What moves your heart? What are the passions of your heart? And you know what's sad about our generation? A lot of people cannot answer that question. A lot of people are asked, what is your passion? What is your passion? What are you passionate about? And a lot of people say, I don't know. I'm passionate about yelping and looking up good food. I'm passionate about Stranger Things. I spent all night watching that. Actually, Kristen and I literally finished that in 2 days. See, I know. Don't judge me, okay? Don't judge me. The question I want to ask is, what is the shape of your heart? What are the passions that God's placed on the inside of you that shape the way that you look at the world and shape the way that you emotionally respond to it? What I want you to know is this: God has wired each of our hearts differently. That means he's placed certain passions in me. He's placed certain passions in Ying. He's placed certain passions in Pastor Larry Ann. He's placed different passions in every single one of his sons and daughters. Not one of you are passionless. Not one of you. Ying, for example, look at his body. What do you think he's passionate about? Video games, obviously. No. Ying is passionate about bodybuilding, about working out. There's that thing that God's placed on the inside of us that stir up strong, intense emotions that make our hearts move. And so God has placed passions in each of our hearts, different ones. And what these passions are compasses that lead us toward the destiny that God has for us. You see, last week we talked about gifts, and gifts are a piece of the puzzle of your destiny, but another part of that puzzle are your passions. And listen, I'm telling you today, if you don't know what you're passionate about, and I'm not talking just about Jesus, that's a given. But if you don't know what you're passionate about, I believe that God is calling you in this season to stand up and to move and pursue the discovery of your passions. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. You see, the truth is, most of us are exerting all of our energies and all of our efforts on the things that actually don't move our hearts. A lot of us are spending most of our time, most of our energy, most of our money, most of our resources, most of our being on the things that we don't even care about. Come on, how many of you guys resonate with that? If you map out the timeline of your week, how many hours did you actually spend on doing something that actually moved your heart? Something that you were actually passionate about, something that you cared about. And we wonder why we feel like zombies Monday morning. When we wake up like, coffee, work. We wonder why we feel like zombies. It's because we're not living or pursuing or exerting all of our lives towards what we're actually passionate about. Now listen, church, don't get me wrong. I am not saying quit your job, okay? I am not saying quit your job Monday morning, because there's also a heavy level of responsibility that we have to balance. What I'm saying is this: if you're not spending any time of your week, any time of your day, pouring yourself into what you're actually passionate about, you're missing your mark, and you'll never step into your destiny. Unless you do, unless you start exerting yourself into the things that actually move your heart, you'll never truly feel like you're living. Come on, how many of you resonate with that? For some of you, it's been a while since you felt like, I'm alive, like I'm living. Okay, maybe Sunday I'll come and I'll get a dose of life. This is living now, real love. But then as soon as you leave church, your entire week, you don't feel alive a single moment. I'll tell you why. It's because you're not pursuing what you're passionate about. And I believe that God has called the church, the sons and daughters of God, to be passionate people. I'll tell you what if you walked into this church, okay, and it was like, you know, worship's done, and then it's time for the message, and all of a sudden, Pastor Mickey, everyone's yelling, and I come out like, not today, Satan. Mm-mm. What if I were to come out? I said, hello, everyone. Do you love Jesus? I really, really love Jesus. You see, I believe that the people of God were called to be passionate people, full of passion, full of life. And listen, not just passionate about him. And I'm talking about, you should be passionate about him. That should be the core of your passion. But I also believe that there are things that God's placed in us that we can be passionate about that pertain to our life. One of my favorite pastors says, discover your passion and thrust your whole self into it. This is how you step into the thing that God's called you to do in your life. Now, we talked about it the last few weeks, but there are three types of passions that I'm going to talk about today. And these three passions help you identify kind of what are the things that move your heart. And there's three types of passions that we're going to go over, and that we're going to talk about what it means to no longer have passive passion, okay? The first type of passion is this. It's empathic longing. And the question that we have to ask is, what breaks your heart? What breaks your heart? What moves you to a place of compassion? If we look at Jesus in Matthew 14:14, it says when Jesus, he was walking around the land doing ministry. It said when Jesus landed on the boat, he landed and saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them and healed their sick. You see, Jesus had empathic longing for the sick. So much so that it moved his heart to a place of compassion. When he saw a sick person, his heart broke. And it broke so much that it moved him to a place of compassion, and it moved him to a place of action. If you look at the disciples, they often looked upon those who were weak, those who were poor, those who were lowly, those who were forgotten, had compassion on them, and led them to love them. The question I want to ask you is this: is there anything that you're passionate about in the area of empathic longing? Is there anything that breaks your heart? And I'm not just talking about, you know, you see a compassion poster and see some orphans and you're like, oh, that's sad. What should we get for lunch? No, I'm talking about when you see something, the image is grained in your heart. It's there. It's burned into you. It breaks your heart so much so that you can't even function until you give it up to God. The thing that I'm talking about is, what breaks your heart? What is your empathic longing? You know, one of my favorite speakers, her name is Heidi Baker. And I love it because Heidi Baker, her life was completely turned around when she decided to go to Africa. And her heart, when she saw these orphans with nothing to eat, with nothing to wear, with no shelter over their heads, when they saw these orphans with no fathers and no mothers, no role models, no one that they could look up to, no one that could love them or take care of them, her heart broke. She tapped into God's heart that broke for the orphans. And you know what she did? She did something about it. She pursued her passion for the orphans, to see the orphans no longer fatherless and motherless. And so she started a series of orphanages all throughout Africa that now house over thousands of children. You see, that is empathic longing. You know, another example that I could think of, when we went to Uganda this summer, I was so inspired by Connie and her friend Katie. And the reason why I was inspired by them is because, you know, sometimes you go on mission trips and you see those who are poor, those who are hurting, and, you know, you are sad about it. But I remember one night when we sat all together at the table, I remember Connie was just sharing openly with us about how hard it was for her. And you could see in her eyes, with the tears coming down her face,
that this wasn't just a topic that you get sad about and forget. This is something that was burned in our heart. The people of Uganda that have no water, that have no source of food or income. When I looked into Connie's eyes, I saw empathic longing. I saw passion. Passion to say, I look upon these people in this village in Uganda and I can't let them starve. I can't let them be thirsty. I can't let them go Jesusless. See, that is empathic longing. I tell you what. One of the things that I found most attractive about Krista, and I still find most attractive about Krista, I remember we were just friends back in 2008 when we went to Korea. We were just walking down the busy street, and I'll never forget this. I appreciated her so much, and there's something so attractive about what she did. When we were walking down the street, there was a beggar, a Korean beggar, an old man with no legs. He was on a cart just wheeling himself around. And I remember Krista didn't even say anything to us. She just literally walked away from us and disappeared for a second. She walks out of a store with a pastry. And you could see in her eyes that it was more than just, this is the right thing I need to do, the Christian thing. You could see there was empathic longing. See, Krista has compassion for the homeless, for the weak, and also cats, stray cats. I don't know why. There's a popular documentary called The Dropbox. It's about this Korean man, this old man who could no longer see babies being aborted and tossed in Korea like they're trash. And so what he did is he created this box in this village where people that didn't want their babies could come and drop the baby off in the box and he would take care of them with his family. That's empathic longing. When you look upon something and it breaks your heart, and it breaks your heart really because it breaks God's heart. You tap into God's heart. That is empathic longing. Let me ask you something. Do any of you have empathic longing for anything? Listen, for some of you, it might be for the homeless. For some of you, it might be for the orphan. For some of you, it might be for those who have been in domestic violence cases. For some of you, it might be for those who don't have a family. What breaks your heart? The second type of passion is moral indignation. In other words, what angers your heart? Ooh. Some of y'all like, you're not supposed to be angry, Pastor Mickey. That's not the Christian. No, that's not true. The question is, what angers your heart? What moves you to say, there can be no peace in me until this is resolved? You see, Jesus modeled what righteous moral indignation looked like. If you remember Matthew 21, 12 through 13, Jesus entered the temple courts and he drove out all, I mean, literally, he walked in and he took time. He fashioned his weapon. Like, he put together this elusive, this really technological whip. He walked back in, and he started driving out all those who were buying and selling there. He overturned tables. Dang, tables. Can you imagine someone walking in our doors, overturning the welcome table? Like, that's what he did. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves. He says, it is written, he said to them, my house will be called a house of prayer, but you are making it a den of robbers. He felt moral indignation when he saw people defiling the house of God. The question I want to ask you is this: what angers your heart? What when you see, what injustice when you see it, you say, there can be no peace in me until there is peace over there. There can be no resolve in me until that is resolved. What moves your heart to anger? If we look at the life of Moses, you know, we talked about it a few weeks ago, but Moses, when he saw his fellow Israelite being mistreated by an Egyptian, it moved him to a place of anger. Of course, that anger was misplaced, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But what is the passion of moral indignation in your life? If you remember the life of Abraham, you know, when Lot was taken, you know, his homie, he said, I'm not going to let them take him. And he marched with his army in anger, and he took back Lot. He took back all of their possessions. This is what I'm talking about. What moves your heart in anger? For some of you, certain injustices move your heart in that place. Systematic poverty, human trafficking, the rape culture, racial injustice. You know, there's some amazing figures who moved because of moral indignation, who said, I cannot stand idly while there is injustice happening in the world. One of my favorite figures, William Wilberforce, an abolitionist in the 1800s who fought to stop the slave trade. He saw that there were slaves, and he believed it was so wrong, and he could not just stand by and let that happen. He said, I'm going to do something about it. Martin Luther King Jr., who was fighting for equal rights, because of moral indignation. One of my good friends, Benji Nolo, he oversees Exodus Cry, which is a human sex trafficking ministry in Kansas City. He was so moved by the stories of people being sex trafficked. People as young as 5 and 3 and 2, people, kids, babies. He was so moved in anger that he had to do something about it. And so he produced a movie called Nefarious, one of the most powerful documentaries I have ever seen. I literally have seen it over 10 times, and every time it moves me. It breaks my heart. I'm in tears. All because he experienced moral indignation. You know what? You know what I'm morally indignant about? I get so mad at this one person. You might know him. His name is the devil. There's something in me that, you know, usually I'm a nice guy, like, oh, hey, Ying, how's it going, you know? But nothing upsets me more when I see the enemy tormenting someone's life and them being tormented when they don't even need to be tormented, when they could have the authority to say, uh-uh, tell the devil no, not today. That is what moves me to anger. When I see someone walking in insecurity when they don't need to be walking in security. When I see someone walking in anxiety and they don't need to be. See, what moves you to moral indignation? Now, I want to make this distinction. Moral indignation does not mean raging out of control, okay? Okay, don't get mad at something I say, run up here and flip my table, break my laptop again, okay? Moral indignation does not mean anger out of control. It does not mean raging out of control. Actually, in the Bible, it says, in your anger, do not sin. And the crazy thing about this is when we read that story about Jesus, we think of a madman, right? Who was so out of control that he fashioned together this crazy whip, drove all these people out, overturned tables, like, ah! But you know what's crazy? Jesus was a man who knew no sin, which means that all that was happening right there, he was in full self-control. And what I'm talking about when I talk about moral indignation, a passion of moral indignation, I'm talking about not raging where you lose control, lose your head. I'm talking about an anger that is disciplined in self-control, an anger that is targeted where it needs to be targeted, targeted towards what it needs to be targeted towards, and not taken out on everyone else in the way. That is what moral indignation is. It is possible to be angry and yet not sin. I do not experience that very often, but it is possible by the power of the Holy Spirit. And I believe there are people like William Wilberforce and Martin Luther King Jr. who exercise moral indignation in a peaceful way. Do you hear what I'm saying, church? And so the first is empathic longing, and the second is moral indignation, two types of passion. I do want to say something about these two types of passion because it's a little different from the third one I'm talking about in the sense that empathic longing and moral indignation, there is a huge temptation to judge others through the lens of your passion. In other words, I can't tell you how many people have come to me when I was an associate pastor in Emeryville, and they say, Pastor Mickey, why ain't your church doing no outreach in Oakland? And I'd be like, oh, you know, because we're doing this overseas, we have a heart. He's like, that's not what you need to be passionate about. That's not what you need to focus on. You see, have you ever had someone attack your passion because of their passion? Have you ever had someone say, my passion is more valid? This is actually what the church needs to be pursuing. You see, you have to understand that every single person has different passions, and just because someone is not as passionate about you, about what you're passionate about, doesn't mean that they're wrong. Just because someone's passionate about reaching the homeless here in San Francisco and someone else is passionate about reaching the orphans in Indonesia, it does not mean that one is wrong and one is right. It means that we have to be a body. It means that we have to bring our passions together so that we can have a holistic transformation of the world that God has called us to serve. And so the pitfalls of both empathic longing and moral indignation is the temptation to judge someone who isn't as passionate about you, but we cannot let our hearts go to that place. Understand that everyone has different passions. Listen, some of you might be here at Soda, and you might be judging us because we're not doing this or that. But let me tell you something. That's why you're here. Ooh, I told someone, hey, check this out. This was a savage moment. I told someone in Emeryville who came up to me like, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? I said, that's why you're here. Why don't you take responsibility for it? That's the passion that God gave you. That's the heart that he gave you. Why don't you activate it and actually do something about it instead of complaining about it? You see, there's a reason why you're here. There's a reason why you're passionate about something that the person to your left is not as passionate about. I'm preaching. Okay, the third is a little more lighthearted. The third type of passion is this. It's avid enthusiasm. This is the question. What excites your heart? In other words, what makes you come alive? What do you enjoy doing? For some of you, you might say, I enjoy vegging out. No, that's not what I'm talking about. What do you enjoy doing? You know, one of my favorite stories is with one of my favorite characters of the Bible, David. David had an avid enthusiasm for the presence of God. And I remember there's one story where, you know, the Ark of the Covenant is coming back into the city of God. And you know what he does? He is so enthused, he starts stripping off of his clothes, starts stripping off everything, and starts dancing the Ark of the Covenant into town. You see, the presence is what David was avidly enthused about. The question I want to ask you is this: what excites your heart? What makes you come alive? You know, for me, it took me a while to hone in on this. I thought maybe it's music, you know, maybe it's pastoring, I don't know, maybe it's writing or maybe it's design, whatever. I realized that what makes me come alive is expressing creativity in any way. That's why, you know, when I'm making these graphics and I'm working on Instagram, like, it's not draining for me. Actually, it makes me come alive. The ability to exercise creativity in an artful way makes me come alive. It's something that I could do even if I wasn't paid to do it. What is that thing? You know, I talked to someone the other week, and they said, you know what? You know what makes me come alive? Coding. I was like, really? Like, coding? Is that something about coding, about creating something from nothing, like putting numbers together, putting all these things together so that I could create some kind of functionality. There's something about that that makes me come alive. That's why I could do it for hours and hours upon at a time. That's why I could spend all night doing it, because I love that idea of coding. There's other people like Steve Jobs, who had a passion for innovation. When he was innovating technology, it brought him life. It was something that he got excited about. When we think about the basketball great, someone like Kobe Bryant. Oh, thanks, guys. Come on. Got some LA folks in the house. Come on. Usually I get booed for that. Someone like Stephen Curry, right? Someone who is passionate about their game, where when they're playing basketball, it makes them come alive. They enjoy doing it. What is that thing that you enjoy doing that makes you come alive? I have a few friends. They're in a rap group. Wow, I said that so uncool. Rap group? I don't know. They're in this music group, and they do music full-time for a living. They're not doing any secondary job, and they're struggling to make ends meet. They moved out to a city that's big for music. They had no backup plan. There was no plan B. They said, I'm going to thrust all of myself into music because that's what I'm passionate about. And I asked them, like, bro, isn't it tough? Like, some of them starting to get married and stuff. Like, isn't it tough? He's like, yeah, but I cannot be doing anything else. This is what I was made to do. He said, there's something about when I make music, when I'm performing in front of people, that makes me come alive. This is something that not just I enjoy doing, but I feel like this is what I was created to do. What are you avidly enthusiastic about? In other words, what would you do if you didn't get paid to do it? That's a good question. I bet you some of you wouldn't be at your jobs if you didn't have to worry about money. I bet you some of you wouldn't be doing the hobbies that you're doing if you didn't have to worry about money. What is that thing that you would be willing to do even if you never got paid to do it? See, here's the cool thing. When you do what you enjoy doing, life is just brighter. How many have ever experienced that where I'll give you a great example. When I was in college, when I was making music, I remember after I would finish a song or after I'd spend an hour or two working on music, when I would walk out of my room, you know, everything just seemed a little brighter. Like, I swear, I'll look outside and I never see hummingbirds, but I'll see a hummingbird right there. It would, like, wink at me, like, ding, like, everything just looks more vibrant. Life is just that much more exciting. You feel like humming and singing. You know, a book that Pastor Benjamin talked about is a book called The War of Art. And he says, in this book, there was a writer who had stopped writing for many years because the idea of writing a novel or producing something was so daunting to him, so he put away his typewriter. But he said one day, after many years of not writing, he decided to brush the dust off that typewriter, pulled it out, and he decided, just for the next hour, even if I don't write anything good, I'm just going to write. And so he starts writing, and after an hour, he pulls out what he wrote, and he starts reading it, and he realizes, this is garbage. And so he ends up crumpling it away, throwing it away, putting his typewriter away, walking away discouraged. But then he realized as he was walking through his kitchen that there were dishes that needed to be done. And for some reason, he decided, I'm going to do the dishes. And so he walks up and he starts doing the dishes, and he realizes as he's doing the dishes, he starts tapping his feet. And as he's doing the dishes, he starts actually starting to hum. And he realized that the whole day was like that, where all of a sudden, things were just a little bit brighter. Things were just a little more vibrant. There was another kick to a step. You know, if you've ever been in love, there's like a kick to your step, right? I remember when I was first starting to date Krista, like I was just so happy. So happy, and I'm still very happy, but there's something about when you first, No, I'm just kidding. What I'm saying is there's something about when you found what you're avidly enthusiastic about, where life is just that much more amazing. And I think that's the way that God wants us to live. Some of you just need to begin spending your free time doing something that you love to do, instead of just trying to recuperate from what you don't want to do. I feel like some of you wouldn't be as cranky. I feel like some of you wouldn't be as tense. But I also feel like some of you will begin to start feeling alive. Or even though I have to go back to that workplace where I don't like what I'm doing, all of a sudden, because I've done something that brings me joy, that I enjoy doing, when I walk back into that place, all of a sudden, it's not as bad. And actually, I find joy in it now. See, it all flows from what makes you avidly enthusiastic. And let me tell you, some of the greatest fruit of your life will come from doing what you enjoy doing. And let me tell you, church, if you don't know what you enjoy doing, you got to find that out. Because it's not just your sake. It's not just your life on the line. But actually, some of the people that I mentioned, like Steve Jobs and all these people who found that thing that they're avidly enthusiastic about, ended up changing the world. See, when you find that thing that you enjoy doing most, chances are that it's going to bring life to the people around you. And so these three types of passion, there's moral indignation, empathic longing, and avid enthusiasm. And what you do is when you figure out what these passions are and you weigh them against your gifts, you start to get a clearer picture of what that thing is that God's called you to do. Now, this is the question I want to ask you is, are you passive in your passion? I felt some of you like, are you passive in your passion? In other words, have you not taken the time or effort to discover what you're passionate about? And so actually the reason you don't know what you're passionate about is because you haven't taken the time or the effort or waited with God and community about what actually brings or moves your heart. The second question I want to ask is, have you been inactive in pursuing your passion? You know what that thing is that moves your heart, but you haven't been active in pursuing your passion. Listen, last week we said gifts are like muscles, and the more that you exercise them, the stronger that you get, the bigger that your muscles grow. Well, if gifts are like muscles, I believe that passion is like fire. Passion is like fire, and listen, what happens to fire if you don't continue to tend to it is that fire begins to fizzle out. It begins to burn out. And listen, that passion, that fire that I'm talking about is that very essence that makes you be alive. It's the reason why God's placed you on this earth. If nothing moves your heart, I feel sad for you. I really do. If you're walking through your life and nothing moves your heart anymore, then that's such a dangerous, cold-hearted place to be. But I believe that God has called the people of God to be a people whose hearts are so tender that they're consistently moved by the things of God and by the things of earth. See, this is what happens when we tend to grow older. We trade in our passions for responsibilities. In other words, we say, I have no more room. I can afford no more room to be passionate because I have to be responsible now. And that is actually the pitfall of growing up, is that we trade in our passions and dreams for responsibility and maintaining. And what ends up happening is that these people begin to spend all their time, all their effort, all their energy doing the things that they don't even want to do. Doing the things that bring them no life. I read an article, and it was a study on regrets. And they asked some of these older people, what do you regret most about life? Some of them said, I didn't spend time making meaningful relationships, and now I feel lonely. Some of them said, you know, I wish I hadn't, you know, cheated on my wife. I wish I hadn't messed up in that way. But actually, a majority of the people, you know how they answered? They said, I wish I had spent more time doing things that I actually cared about. Meaning, we have this small chunk of life, 60 to 80 years. I don't know, maybe 200 because of scientific advancement. I don't know. But We have this small blip throughout in weighing against all of eternity. We have this small time here on earth. And for me, what I realize is I don't want to get to the end of my life and say that I spent a majority of it doing things that had no eternal weight and that had no movement of my heart. I don't want to get to my 40s and say, my 30s, I did a great job being responsible. I did a great job doing this. And no, I want to get to my 40s and say, I actually gave my heart to the things that I cared about. I actually pursued the things that moved my heart, the passions that God has placed on the inside of me. See, will you find yourself at the end of your life completely unhappy and unfulfilled about the way that you lived your life? Listen, of course, okay, I'll get to the end of my life and fulfillment is Jesus. But there's this other sense that when you get to the end of your life, have I wasted my time here? Because I have an eternity with Jesus, but I only have 60 years here. Did I waste my time here on earth? Or did I actually put my effort and put my energy towards the things that I actually cared about, the things that God himself placed on my heart? What I want to tell you is this. God is calling you to reignite your passion. Listen, for some of you, you've put your passion away, and there's various reasons. It could have been fear or failure or disappointment, or even just the fear of not knowing what it might be. Some of you, you've put your passions away, and it's collected dust on the shelf. But what I feel like God is saying is, ooh, we're going to blow that dust off that passion, that thing that moves your heart, that makes you come alive. We're going to grab it, and we're going to insert it right back into the core of your being. I feel like God is saying, now is the time, church, that you have to reignite and feed your passion. See, the way that you keep a fire going is you feed it. Listen, if I had a fire burning right here, it would probably burn out in a few minutes. But if I kept feeding it things that fire feeds on, feeding it wood, feeding it paper, I don't know, whatever fires, I don't know. The question I'm asking is, are you feeding your passion right now? And like I said, it doesn't mean dropping everything, being irresponsible and deciding to do that. It means in your life, are you consistently disciplined in making space for pursuing your passions and feeding your passions? See, the fruit of passion is life in you and life around you. When I see people who have been the most impactful throughout history, it's because they found something worth doing that not only made them come alive on the inside, but made people around them come alive. See, not only do you feel fulfilled, but you begin being effective in bringing life to this lifeless world. Now, some of you wonder why when you go on missions, right, on the mission field, you just feel alive. Some of you hate going on mission fields, mosquitoes, humidity. But some of you, when you're on the mission field, you're like a whole new person. You wonder why. I'll tell you why. It's because you're living out your passion. You're actively loving the people that God's called you to love. You're actively listening for God every single day. You're actually in that place where I'm walking out in the passion that God has given me. See, greatness is never achieved in passivity. And passion's fruit is life all around you. Passion's fruit is a world that's transformed. The last thing I want to say is this, because some of y'all hearing this and you're saying, that's not theologically correct. Well, let me tell you something. You have to prioritize your passions. In other words, yes, there are passions that God has placed on the inside of you, but it's only secondary to what should be your greatest passion, which is for cheeseburgers. I'm just kidding. Your greatest passion, first and foremost, needs to be for Jesus. This is why we use David as a model in the beginning, because David, more than being a king, more than being a warrior, more than being an excellent shepherd or an amazing harpist, the heart of David was this. It was a heart that was after God. See, David's greatest passion was Jesus. David's greatest passion was God. But as soon as he had that in that first place of priority, all of a sudden, all these other passions started to surface. And you know, the Bible verse that comes to mind is that delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. In other words, if you surrender to God, your greatest passion, which is my passion to pursue you, my passion, my eternal destiny to be with you. And all of a sudden, he begins surfacing the other passions and the other desires of your heart, and he releases you into it. What happens when you do it out of order is that your passions actually move you away from your destiny. But when you have prioritized your passions and your core passion is passion for Jesus, that even if I never do anything significant in this life, even if I never hit my mark, even if I never have that fulfillment of the promise, even if I never get famous and have mass influence, even if that thing doesn't happen for me, that I will not be disappointed because my greatest priority is you and I have you for eternity. But once that's the core of your foundation, God begins bringing out the desires, the dreams, the other passions that he's placed inside of you. You know, we have a friend who was very passionate about Jesus. And all of a sudden, God called this person to begin doing this other venture, and it became very, very successful. And what ended up happening was his priority used to be Jesus, and then his passion for his endeavor was secondary. But what began to happen is it began to shift and be lopsided. And all of a sudden, his passion for his venture was higher and greater than his passion for Jesus. And what happened is everything started to fall apart. Family life started to fall apart. His spiritual walk started to fall apart. And even internally, there was no more life in the thing that used to bring him life. Why? Because you have to prioritize your passion. Listen, if you pursue the passions of your heart without first and foremost pursuing God, it'll leave you empty. But actually, when you have set your heart to prioritize God as your passion, all of a sudden these other passions bring you life and bring life in the people around you. Your passion for Jesus actually fuels your passion for destiny. And so listen, we're going to respond here. I want everyone to close their eyes. I already feel that some of you are hearing this word and you're like, Pastor Mickey, you're way too optimistic. I mean, let's be real. I got to wake up tomorrow morning. I got to be back at the job that I don't like to do. Let me tell you something. I believe that whenever we cast our hope in Jesus, whenever we cast our future and our destiny and everything in the hands of Jesus, you can never be too optimistic. In other words, some of you, you've lost the capacity to feel passion or to dream. And I feel like what God is doing in this season is he's healing you of that brokenness. For some of you, it's because of disappointment, because of fear, because of failure. But what I feel like God is doing is saying, now is the time, again, child, for you to reignite passion. For some of you, God is just simply saying this. Forget everything else. You got to restore your passion for me. Like for some of you, God's saying, you got to prioritize me first before you even think about this thing called destiny. For some of you, I believe that God is saying there are long-lost passions that you've shelved that you haven't been actively feeding. And I feel like for some of you, God is saying it's time. It's time to blow the dust off that passion, bring it back out, and light it up. Church, are we going to be a church that's lifeless, that walks around just as everyone else walks around in this world, that walks around with no hope for a future, that walks around with no hope for humanity, that walks around with no fire in their step? Or are you going to walk around being full of life, being full of passion? Listen, when I think about the church that Jesus died for, I don't think about a lifeless, zombie-like church that's just getting by, that's just surviving. When I think about the church that Jesus died for, I think about a church that's full of life, that's vibrant, that's passionate about the things of life. When I think about the church that Jesus paid for, I think about a church that's ready, that's full of optimism and hope to see a world transformed. Will you take up your passion again? Will you reignite your passion? Right now, I just want you to take a moment, and I just want you to interact with God. I want you to ask God, God, what are you speaking to me through this message? What is that thing that you're calling me to do? Or what's the way that you're calling me to respond?